Rixby.log, 3rd of March 2010. You can email me at heyrick1973@yahoo.co.uk. To block or not to block? It is a burning question in the domain of the wired world. Online advertising is rife. The use of Adblock Plus is sky high. What gives?
You have just won $1 billion!
Click here to provide bank details in order to collect your winnings.
Many sites wish to augment their income by placing sponsored advertising on the site. While this is not unreasonable on the face of it, the fact is advertising got greedy and presented massive pop-up adverts, some of which chained one after another, so getting rid of them was difficult. Some, your computer's infected, click here to spoof system dialogues and work by tricking the clueless. Others, you have just won, work on gullibility. But most are just bogus. If I'm looking for that perfect little PHP routine, I don't want to see home insurance.
Need new sofa? Hundreds in stock. Crazy prices. Just call 555. Sofas are us.
I usually read the register, and I usually block adverts. Well, I switch all the blocking off and authorize 8 other domains. TradeDoubler, AdLedge, DoubleClick, Google Stuff, AdViva, QuantSurf, more Google Stuff, specific click. The adverts are all in French, so at least it notices the country. At the top of the page is an advert for Orange TV. Gee, who's my ISP, numbnuts? Why are you advertising what I could already get if it didn't mean a headache and messing with my satellite dish? Down the ways on the right, Cortal Consors, which appear to be... actually, I'm not sure. Further down, Indirect Savings Livret Epargne Orange, offering 4.5 guaranteed, see the footnotes, the one with the conditions saying, for the first week only, or some such. Given this site promotes itself as biting the hand that feeds IT, we can clearly see why automatic adverts annoy people. And given there appear to be 3 adverts, why were there 8 domains to be added? Where's ThinkGeek? Where's Maplin? Where's anything with the slightest bit of IT relevance? Actually, there was one. Avnet, Enterprise Open Storage Solutions, part of a massively subtle textual advertising provided by Google. Hell, the color scheme fit. I thought it was some extra content at the bottom of the site. And it was relevant. Impressive. But also a useful exercise. I have so many more ad sites to blacklist. Google is starting to make inroads with small, tactful adverts, which actually seem to make sense to the content concerned. However, this is, for myself and numerous others, a case of too little too late. We're sick of fake warning windows, we're sick of dozens of pop-ups and pop-unders, we're sick of screaming flashy gaudy adverts with the associated sound effects of extremely unwanted at 4 in the morning when other people are sleeping. 3 times for emphasis. We're sick of it. We're sick of it.
You might die tomorrow. Ensure your loved ones cry at your funeral and not the expenses you leave behind. www.gratefuldead.net. A selection of policies so lovely they'll be grateful that you're dead.
You'll hear that it is stealing to visit a website with advert blocking. The arguments for this sound fairly convincing, but once you remove the pity me poor webmaster whine, you'll find the following analogy useful. The webmaster lives on the corner at the edge of town. He erects a billboard. On this billboard, he places a cute, demure, and mostly undressed girl. Well, a giant photo of her. Then he walks around telling people not to look unless they take one of the flyers he's handing out. How looking is theft unless you take a flyer. See how stupid the argument is? A website offered to the world is visible to the world. As a webmaster, you are perfectly within your rights to scatter advertising all over the place. And we, as visitors, are perfectly within our rights to block undesirable content, be it a blanket ban on Flash or an advert blocker. To be honest, I don't actually think Adblock Plus gets much of a look-in, for NoScript usually prevents most advertising from appearing. Security trumps adverts, every time. Don't even begin to say that it is theft. Refer to that ludicrous analogy above. You put content up for the world to see, then want to tell us how to see it. Fine, go ahead. But don't be surprised if an increasing number of us vote with our feet. It's standing up for what we, users, believe in. It would appear that the majority of advert schemes are pay-per-click rather than pay-per-view. So not only do we have to see adverts, we have to visit them, which is something I have no intention of doing. I have never, ever, clicked an online advert for the goodies promised. And as such, my hiding adverts does not necessarily equal loss of your revenue. Furthermore, there are a number of access methods which are billed according to consumption and or time, such as dial-up or GPRS, which can be counter-argued that forcing advertising is stealing from visitors. And let me tell you, the cost to visit a bandwidth-heavy, advert-laden site will likely be considerably more than the minute fraction of a cent per advert that might be missed out on otherwise. Some say it is a private website, not a public one. Whoa, incorrect. It may be privately owned, but if anybody can access it, it is public. The alternative, a private site, is one running an access control technology that lets only certain people, usually subscribers, access the content. It is generally the case that the most vocal supporters of advertising are those with the ad-ridden sites. They accuse us of take. When we visit with ad blockers, they see their content in SEO terms, that a web page has to perform, that the efforts in producing the content need to be monetized. Us Brits wouldn't use a word like monetized willingly. This is probably the biggest difference between the web and Web 2.0. Oh sure, people point out user interactivity from blog comments to MySpace meetings, but there's little human interaction that a half-decent BBS didn't offer 2 decades ago. You can see and speak in real time with Skype, but trust me, if the technology in the late 80s was up to it, we would have done it back then. No, the big difference in Web 2.0 is the number of people seeing their site purely in monetary terms. Site equals profit. And that's all they seem to be able to comprehend. The biggest fail of a question is to ask, is it moral? There is no morality or ethics involved in putting adverts on the site. I, personally, consider it unethical, but I don't expect others to have the exact same set of standards as me. Everybody's different. And it isn't really a question of ethics or morals if you perceive your site in terms of dollar symbols. The advertising is merely a means to an end. Likewise, blocking adverts. It's not immoral, it's not unethical. It is a technological method of filtering content that you either don't want to see, don't want to risk on your computer, and or don't want to pay to retrieve. I can obtain a magazine with adverts, but I'm under no obligation to look at one of them. They are, mostly, the printed form of white noise. Likewise, I can access a website with adverts, but I'm under no obligation to devote my time or bandwidth or processing to them. The final prong of the argument is one that pro-ad people usually become irrational in arguing, because they have no valid counter-argument. Ready? There are fairly few organizations who provide embedded paper whatever advertising. In order to advertise, they must establish a communication between your computer and theirs. This is usually invoked by an embed or a script of some sort on the site being visited. I probably got nonsense adverts on the register because I was unprofilable. I run a plugin that scrambles many known tracing cookies, and I also delete flash cookies. If I used a normal browser and visited normal sites and saw all the adverts, these companies would be able to track my activities, my interests, the sites I visit, and the times of day I do so, and from this build a profile of the sort of person I am, which may have slightly more commercial value than simply feeding more applicable advertising. This is an enormous privacy concern, and one of the primary reasons I do not permit advertising to be displayed on my computer. The site of the advertisee only knows my presence in the site, and its cookies, if it provides them, are only valid for the site, and its understanding of the outside world does not stretch beyond the referral text. Targeted advertisers, running the same advert system on numerous sites, will be able to track you from one to the next. Sure, they're only capable of seeing you in context of their adverts, but by constructing special URLs, they will know which advert on which third-party site they are feeding. To me, this is an unacceptable invasion of privacy. An unacceptable and unwanted profiling that is far too easily corrupted, say if a friend used my computer for an hour while I was taking a meal. I say no. I run no script and Adblock Plus. End of. By the way, I hope you like my adverts, the ones that I snuck in between those paragraphs. There are a few in-jokes lurking in there. Oh my god, I'm in vogue! For years, us so-called climate change skeptics have been regarded as nutcases and head-in-the-sand idiots for failing to see the bleeding obvious. The sad fact is many of us CCSs were not actually skeptical about climate change, for we're smart enough to be aware that climate changes. Our skepticism was aimed more at the promoted extent of mankind's responsibility. We're frequently accused of total lack of scientific knowledge, and were considered thusly unqualified for making any sort of comment whatsoever. Our counter-arguments run mostly as follows. Bullet point. True science is not absolute. It is a best guess given examination of all available data. The data pertaining to global warming is not publicly available. By contrast, the human genome is. Bullet point. Science is subject to peer review. Where's the peer review here? Who independently has access to data to try to work out theories to disprove something? For there can be a dozen ways to prove a point, but only one needs to disprove it. Bullet point. Governments were quite willing to apply taxation on stated causes of global warming. Given that a lot of science is government funded, as is normal, it creates an interesting conflict of interests, which leads to the likelihood of
here is the result we want, then the data so it fits.
Or
apply selective tunnel vision to make this result viable.
Bullet point. First world nations suddenly started talking about carbon trading with third world countries. What utter bollocks! A bank robber does not claim the right to rob more banks because most people do not. The workable solution is to stop robbing banks. Likewise, the workable solution is to reduce carbon emissions instead of purchasing credits from small countries that didn't pollute in the first place so you can all feel good about yourselves. This sort of tactic brings the entire scheme into disrepute. Bullet point. Gross inaccuracies. We know the computer models that predict we'll all have indoor swimming pools, i.e. our living rooms filled with water, in X years. Ice caps melting because of skanky lager louts easy-jetting to Ibiza each summer, and whatever stupid excuse comes next. If I think my shoes get soggy walking across the field to feed the cats, I really don't want to see planet Earth in 50 years. But, wait, hang on. Can you run that simulation backwards? If you do, and it's a true valid simulation, we ought to have a status that fairly well matches the 1950s, which is 50 years in reverse, give or take a few, when we were pretty industrialized and we kept records. Does it work? We don't know, as this information is not publicly available. Thanks to ClimateGate's leaked emails and a number of scientists blowing the whistle, we now realize that climate change is real. Come on, seriously, was that ever in doubt? But that mankind's actual contribution may be negligibly minor, which is sort of what we've been saying all along. The infamous hockey stick-shaped graph, the one Al Gore goes up and up and up and up and up for, has been torn to shreds. The Earth is warming on an upward trend, but you get hot years and cold years, as it's like a sine wave rather than a straight line. A hockey stick-shaped... Woohoo! And up she goes! Well, that was a convenient fabrication. In a clock-like diagram of the evolution of our planet, see geologic timescale on Wikipedia, humans represent a barely visible blip. We're there 11 hours, 59 minutes, 59.99 seconds, if that. And of the entirety of human evolution, we're peeing in our pants over a climatic disturbance of a timescale of a known few hundred years. It's vanishingly unimportant in the scale of things. It is only important to the way the world is for us, here, now. But nature has shown that it's not above wiping the slate clean and starting afresh, i.e. the extinction of the dinosaurs. And it is possible that we have already experienced a cataclysmic flood in the past. Consider what actual scientific reason would explain Noah's Ark. It isn't theological dogma. From ancient Chinese scripture to Greek mythology and historical storytelling such as Lebor Gabela Iren, or however you pronounce that, it's Irish, Aztecs, Incas, pretty much every ancient civilization has a flood story. Global warming? Climate change? Perhaps. Perhaps not. But it is worth pointing out that our planet is in constant turmoil. The seemingly increasing frequency of violent storms should demonstrate this, along with what would appear to be an increasing number of destructive earthquakes. When you couple this with recent events along the French coast, and no doubt other places before too long, you can start to see why I've said that this carbon nonsense should not be our prime concern. The cycle of cause and effect, and what it will mean for us, is what should concern us. The sad casualty in all of this is an inconvenient truth. For as days and revelations pass, Al Gore's Echo Baby looks more and more like a hoax. This is very sad, for if we can accept that the science is screwed up, and if we can accept that man's contribution to climate change may be somewhat different to that which is portrayed, well, we are seeing more violent hurricanes. A huge lake did disappear. There is a story waiting to be told here. Because for all the mud you can sling at Mr. Gore for his scientific analysis, that doesn't change the fact that the things referred to are real. His interpretations and explanations may be off the mark, but the events happened all the same. Do we chalk it up as fate, or do we apply a better scientific analysis? You might wonder why I'm being nice to Mr. Gore instead of slamming him. Well, it's the scientific way. Once, the Earth was the center of the universe, until something was shown to orbit a distant body and not the Earth, and that paved the way for the Earth orbiting the Sun, which is orbiting an arm of a spiral galaxy. Science is about making an assertion and refining it continually to get the best answer. Isaac Newton developed some scary maths which will fly spacecraft to other planets with accuracy, but it's wrong. Albert Einstein developed some seriously frightening maths to refine Newton's concepts. But the world mostly uses Newton's method because it works well enough outside of oddities like high gravitational fields, and to be honest, it's a heck of a lot easier to understand. Likewise, an inconvenient truth showed us some events, and added an explanation and a call to action. The explanation has been shown to be fairly wrong. The correct solution is not to say balls and dismiss it, but to devise a better explanation. Or, I'll put it thus, go find an inconvenient truth. Try your local library if you miss it on TV, and watch it. His explanation stands until such time as it can be refined by a better explanation. Because, as I've said, there is a story here. It is waiting, but not forever.